Good morning, I'm Debbie Cruz. It's Monday, April 22nd. Happy Earth Day. A San Diego Assembly member is proposing removing the requirement to prove Medi-Cal eligibility for children every year. More on the problem it's trying to address next. But first, let's do the headlines. San Diego Mayor Todd Gloria will formally present his proposed budget to the City Council today. The more than $5.5 billion budget for fiscal year 2025 increases funding to address homelessness by more than $25 million. It also sets aside over $100 million for resurfacing 75 miles of streets in the city. That's up from the 60 miles budgeted for this year. The budget eliminates funding for the Office of Immigrant Affairs and the Community Equity Fund. It also suspends contributions to the city's reserves for 1 year. The Disaster Recovery Center set up in Mountain View and Spring Valley after the January floods will become U.S. Small Business Administration Disaster Loan Outreach Centers starting today. The move comes after last Friday's deadline for flood victims to apply for federal aid. The SBA Outreach Centers will provide information on loan opportunities. The agency says small businesses and most private nonprofit organizations have until November 19th to apply for an economic injury disaster loan. City of San Diego residents can now apply for help paying for lead paint hazard removal services. That's because the city was awarded a $15 million settlement after suing paint companies. The city says that exposure from deteriorating lead paint continues to be one of the biggest environmental health concerns for children. Exposure to lead can slow growth and development and can cause learning, behavior, hearing, and speech problems. For more information and to apply, visit sdhealthyhomes.org. From KPBS, you're listening to San Diego News Now. Stay with me for more of the local news you need. Over 325,000 children in San Diego County rely on Medi-Cal, California's health insurance program for low-income individuals. Each year, families have to prove eligibility or risk losing coverage. Health reporter Heidi DeMarco says a San Diego Assembly member wants to take that burden away from families.
Beatrice Fernandez found out her son lost his coverage days after he had heart surgery.
It's scary. For me, it's life and death. I mean, the follow-up to the cardiology is crucial because I need to know what his echocardiogram's like. They needed to make sure that his valve replacement, that the stents and everything was okay.
With help from her son's case manager, his coverage was reinstated the day before his checkup. San Diego Assemblymember Tasha Berner is asking Governor Newsom to fund continuous Medi-Cal coverage for children in his May budget revisions. She also authored AB 2956, which seeks to stop Medi-Cal disenrollments for adults in California. Heidi DeMarco, KPBS News.
Proposition 1 aims to create more mental health support and housing for adults experiencing homelessness. But reporter Tanya Thorne says some advocates fear the measure could divert funding from mental health support for kids.
We really are serious about addressing mental and behavioral health needs across our county. We can't only focus on some of the most visible and some of the and within the adult population.
Erin Hogaboom is with San Diego for Every Child, a coalition of organizations focused on tackling child poverty in San Diego.
We have to be thinking further upstream. We have to be thinking about, you know, the experiences that children and youth are going through now.
She says youth and children advocates fear Proposition 1 could take funding from mental health support for kids. Dr. Pradeep Gidwani is a pediatrician with the San Diego American Academy of Pediatrics. He says the number of children and youth dealing with behavioral and mental health needs has grown.
I appreciate that all of us want to help those folks who are homeless. But if we don't start early and if we don't get those investments in place and be consistent with it, we're going to be paying for this in much greater ways. Can you imagine if we had invested in children's and youth mental health 20 years ago, would we have the current homelessness problem?
He thinks Proposition 1 has noble intentions, but the execution of it could come at a cost for others. Tanya Thorne, KPBS News.
Food deserts are low-income urban areas where fresh, quality food is not easy to find. A group of academics and community leaders are now attacking the problem in San Diego by reimagining the local food industry. SciTech reporter Thomas Fudge has more.
The project is called Nourish, and the central idea is to develop businesses in food deserts that will be vehicles to bring the high-quality food to residents. The principal investigator of the project is Laura Schmidt of UC San Francisco. She says they are not trying to convince stores like Ralph's or Vons to move into the neighborhood.
What we're doing at Nourish is trying to think about alternative models where we could stimulate small business development with local business owners in these communities.
The tool they hope will allow them to create a local food business is an app. Infused with artificial intelligence, it will respond to questions by calling up information about food markets, supply lines, foot traffic, and business licensing. Paul Watson is the president of a San Diego nonprofit called Global Arc, which is a partner in Nourish.
One of the things that we've done over the last year, they've interviewed many existing restaurants, caterers, food trucks, to try to find out what kinds of information did they need when they first got started.
The test areas for the Nourish development model will be food deserts in San Diego and in Imperial County. Thomas Fudge, KPBS News.
The crowdsourced online historical marker database has 375 entries for San Diego County. Most chronicle Spanish colonial early American settlers and U.S. military past. Just a handful mention the millennia-old history of Native Americans in the area. Amitha Sharma looks at just a speck of what Kumeyaay life once was here.
The tranquility near Antonio Garra's grave on a recent morning belies the Native American resistance leader's violent end. He was convicted of murder, theft, and treason in January 1852, and soon after,
they took him out, blindfolded him.
Kumeyaay Community College President Stan Rodriguez is standing next to Garra's final resting place inside El Campo Santo Sanctuary in Old Town San Diego. A historical marker. He describes what came next.
They walked him up the street to this freshly dug grave, had him go on his knees, his hands were tied behind his back, and he said, "I wish to apologize for the things that I've done in the past, and I wait to hear the same from you." He didn't hear it. They shot him. He was buried.
The execution is a snapshot of the cruelty and injustice local tribes endured, first under the Spaniards who came to stay in 1769 and started the San Diego Presidio. The tribes were forcibly converted. Families were split and turned into servants. Rodriguez says the Americans continued the brutality. The first governor of California, Pete Burnett, issued bounties on the heads of Native Americans.
50 cents for a child, $2.50 for a woman, $5 for men. Over $1.5 million was paid off.
Before the invasions, the Kumeyaay and other tribes lived here for millennia, or since time immemorial, as Rodriguez puts it.
We see this place, Old Town. Very few people realize there was a very large Kumeyaay village here, and there were communities all through San Diego, all through the Bay.
He says men, women, and children in the villages rose before the sun. They'd make tule boats to fish. They'd harvest salt, torii pine nuts, and plant oak trees. They did control burns. They created mosaic patterns. But scan a historical marker database, and there is scant mention of the rich and sophisticated Kumeyaay history. The database is assembled by the public and has 375 entries for San Diego County.
Crowdsourcing and those kinds of sites are a really good reflection of American culture and how we look at cultures.
San Diego historian and archaeologist Richard Carrico says academia is working to correct the perception that history begins when the Europeans arrived. The database does include markers for an old Kumeyaay natural kitchen, pictographs, and an ancient Kumeyaay village, Panhay, but it omits the tribe's at least 4,000-year-old history in what is today called the Ramona Grasslands Preserve.
This is a Kumeyaay village site called Pamu, which probably means gathering place or place of the singers, because they had a lot of music and singing in their cultures.
The area had two springs, a female creek and a male one. Carrico says if a Kumeyaay woman wanted to have a son, she would drink from the male spring and vice versa. The land's oak trees, acorns were a major food source, and they traded shell beads.
If you could go back in time, you would see huts sitting out here called Wa. We're in an area where they were doing a lot of tool manufacturing, and they were importing lithic material, stone material, from as far away as Mammoth and from Baja California and from the Salton Sea area.
Steve Benegas is chair of the museum committee at the Barona Cultural Center and Museum. He says leaving out whole histories of ethnic groups, whether in databases or classrooms, robs people of knowledge and understanding of who we are collectively as human beings.
They're missing a big chunk of humanity, a big chunk of spirituality, big chunk of time.
He adds the omissions not only doom us to repeat history, but keep us in the dark about who and what remains. A sign in the museum is a reminder of that message. It says of the Kumeyaay, quote, "We're still here." Amita Sharma, KPBS News.
This story is part of NPR's special series this week on historical markers. That's it for the podcast today. As always, you can find more San Diego news online at kpbs.org. Join us again tomorrow for the day's top stories. I'm Debbie Cruz. Thanks for listening, and have a great Monday.